Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Turkey and a key Syrian opposition group pledged on Saturday to support a complicated and partly secret ceasefire deal agreed upon by the United States and Russia.
First, we agreed on the steps through which the regime will come to a place where it will not fly combat missions anywhere where the opposition is present in an area that we have agreed on with very real specificity. Once this arrangement takes full effect, the regime would no longer be able to do in the future what it has been able to do so much in the past, which is go after Nusra, allegedly, but hit moderate opposition.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry saying the plan also calls for the U.S. and Russia to cooperate on the fight against terror groups within Syria after marathon negotiations with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, in Geneva. Kerry said a nationwide ceasefire would begin Monday at sundown. North Korea said Saturday it would not submit to U.S. nuclear blackmail, a day after shocking the world with its fifth and largest nuclear test. The U.S. is exasperated by the strong military steps being taken by the DPRK in a phased way. The North's latest test preceded a volley of missile launches in recent months, sparking worldwide condemnation. The U.N. Security Council agreeing on Friday immediately to begin work on a new series of sanctions. Sunday marks the 15th anniversary of the September 11th attacks on the U.S. U.S. President Barack Obama Saturday in his weekly address says it was a day one of the darkest in the U.S. country.
15 years ago, a September day that began like any other became one of the darkest in our nation's history. The Twin Towers were reduced to rubble. The Pentagon was in flames. A Pennsylvania field burned with the wreckage of an airplane. And nearly 3,000 innocent lives were lost. This weekend, we honor their memory once more. We stand with the survivors who still bear the scars of that day. We thank the first responders who risked everything to save others.
On Sunday, the annual 9/11 National Day of Service and Remembrance, the president will observe a moment of silence at the White House. Later, he'll speak at a ceremony at the Pentagon honoring those killed 15 years ago. This is VOA News. Top Afghan officials and representatives of an anti-government armed group are said to be moving closer to their protracted peace negotiations, and both sides are expected to sign a deal possibly sometime on Saturday. The president said of the said national government said for months has been engaged in talks with an opposition faction, with disagreements repeatedly stalling the much-touted peace process. Groundbreaking development comes at a time when the largest insurgent group, the Taliban, has intensified attacks across Afghanistan and has made territorial gains in parts of the country. More than 2 million worshippers are expected to begin the Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia on Saturday.
I feel so very great that Allah gave me the opportunity to be among those who witnessed this Jumat prayer today in Haram, Mecca. And I pray, inshallah, be glad to love, may Allah still spare my life to next year so that I will be able to come and perform the same Hajj. The sermon was very good, touching. It was a lecture about what we are going to do in Munna, Arafat and Musarifat. It's all about Hajj. We pray Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will accept our Hajj as Hajj, my bro.
The Hajj is an act of faith required of all able-bodied Muslims once in their life. During the Hajj, pilgrims seek forgiveness for their sins and meditate on their faith. The man who attempted to assassinate U.S. President Ronald Reagan 35 years ago is being permanently released Saturday from a Washington mental hospital. John Hinckley's release comes after a federal judge in July ruled that he's not a danger to himself or the public. Hinckley's release follows years of rehabilitation after being found not guilty by reason of insanity of shooting President Reagan and three others. Hinckley will live with his elderly mother in a gated community in Williamsburg, Virginia, under dozens of conditions. The Islamic State is accused of setting off two bombs outside of a shopping mall in Baghdad overnight, killing at least 12 people and wounding dozens more. Iraqi security officials say at least one of the explosions that struck just before midnight Friday was caused by a suicide bomber. For details on these stories, much more news, join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotier in Washington.
Our argument is that our election petition has not been heard. And according to the Zambian constitution, this is a violation of human rights.
A major Zambian opposition party plans to petition the Supreme Court seeking to stop the installation of President Lungu.
By our laws, the Electoral Commission is authorized to fix the filing fee for persons who will be contesting the presidential and then the parliamentary elections.
The Ghanaian Electoral Commission defends nomination fees for candidates.
It's very interesting scenario in Kenya because these MPs are defecting after just passing the law which bars party hopping.
And over 24 Kenyan opposition parliamentarians defect to the ruling New Jubilee Party. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambians may an opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, plans to petition the Supreme Court Monday, seeking to prevent the official installation of President-elect Edgar Chagwa Lungu, which is planned for Tuesday in the capital, Lusaka. This after the High Court ruled Friday that it lacks the jurisdiction to stop the swearing-in of the president-elect from proceeding as originally planned. Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the UPND, told me the party will not be deterred by efforts to frustrate the opposition party from legally challenging the alleged fraud that led to Mr. Lungu's electoral victory.
We are appealing on Monday. We are preparing our paperwork, and by Monday we are appealing to the Supreme Court to stop the inauguration ceremony.
What do you think are the legitimate prospects of favorable ruling from the Supreme Court?
Our argument is that our election petition has not been heard. And according to the Zambian constitution, this is a violation of human rights, the rights of President Hakainde Hichilema and his running mate to be heard before a court of law. As things stand now, the courts have not declared anyone the winner. So there's no basis for inaugurating anybody because the courts have not declared anyone the winner.
The government or the state is preparing for the official installation of President Edgar Chagwa Lungu on Tuesday. Do you think the court, in this case the Supreme Court, will have ample time to stop the state from going ahead with the inauguration?
We are hoping that the Supreme Court will be able to do that on Monday before the inauguration ceremony. If there's will, that can be done. It should not take days for the Supreme Court to do that.
Don't you think there will be a constitutional crisis here if indeed the Supreme Court goes ahead and stops the official swearing in?
Well, the constitutional crisis is already there, even as we speak now, because the constitution stipulates that when there's an election petition, the president-elect should step aside and hand over executive functions to the Speaker of the National Assembly. And that has not been done. So that has created a constitutional crisis already, and we applied it to the Constitutional Court to compel the President-elect to step aside. And up to now, the Constitutional Court has sat on that application and not ruled on that application. So the constitutional crisis is already there, and therefore, stopping this inauguration is just trying to put things in order so that the president-elect steps aside and the executive functions are done by the Speaker of the National Assembly while the petition is being heard.
The issue of violence has also been mentioned, that Hakainde Hichilema is calling on his supporters to fight for their rights. And some people are saying that call is a call of action to violence. What do you make of that?
The fight is two-pronged. One is the legal route, which we are pursuing in the courts of law. The other one is the political route. In our constitution in Zambia, people have the civil rights to have peaceful demonstrations and so on and so forth. So there is nothing illegal being suggested. It's not violence that's being proposed. It is just that the people have to take their rightful place and fight for the restoration of democracy and for the restoration of our constitution, to respect the constitution. And that's what Hakainde Hichilema was telling the Zambian people at the press conference yesterday.
Some Zambian supporters of the Patriotic Front that I spoke with said that what the UPND is doing now is just being sour losers. They've lost the legitimate election. International poll observers have said the elections were credible, free, fair, and transparent, and that because the UPND has lost, instead of preparing for the next elections in 5 years, they are rather trying to cause havoc, create tension, and undermine the territorial integrity of Zambia. Your take on that accusations or criticism?
Well, our own information, and according to our own panel of voter tabulation, we were winning that election and we are leading by a comfortable 300,000 votes or thereabouts. And therefore we thought that we were the winners. And but because of the manipulation that took place, votes were stolen, and that is the evidence that we want to present to the Constitutional Court so that that evidence will overturn the whole result.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the Zambian Main Opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Electoral Commission of Ghana has sharply denied accusations that its newly released nomination fees for presidential and parliamentary candidates are exorbitant and intended to frustrate smaller political parties. Presidential candidates representing their political parties will be required to pay $12,505, while parliamentary candidates pay $2,501 as nomination fees for the upcoming December 7 general election. Eric Jakpasu, spokesman for the Electoral Commission, told me the body made the announcement following a stakeholders' meeting with the Inter-Party Advisory Committee, or IPAC, in the capital Accra on Thursday.
By our laws, the Electoral Commission is authorized to fix the filing fee for persons who will be contesting the presidential and then the parliamentary elections. The commission announced that presidential candidates will have to pay a fee of 50,000 Ghana cedis, and then the parliamentary candidate 10,000 Ghana cedis.
What do you say to critics who say that the pegging of the fees is too high and that minor parties or smaller parties would be adversely affected? Elimination by rough tactics, they said. What is your response to such criticism?
This is a decision taken by the commission at the very highest level. And I would say that it is not by elimination, by rough tactics, as they put it. These are fees which have been informed by a lot of consideration. And the law also makes room that these are not fees that can be kept by the commission in all, because they are refundable fees. If, as a candidate, you are able to garner some votes in the elections. For example, if you are a presidential candidate, per regulation, if at the end of the election you are able to get 25% of the votes cast in the election, your money is refunded to you. If you are a parliamentary candidate, if you are able to get 12.5% of the votes in your constituency, your money is refunded to you.
What about the date of the filing of nomination for both the presidential and parliamentary aspirants?
2 days for the filing of nominations. That is the 29th and then the 30th of September. But they are to come in from the 13th of September to pick the nomination forms, get it filled and processed, and then they can now file them on the 29th and then the 30th of September.
Do you think this will give them ample time to garner the number of signatures that will enable them qualify to meet the requirement to be candidates for the elections?
Yes, they have enough time to do that because from 13th up to the 29th, you have 16 days. And for a presidential candidate, you need two signatures from each of the 260 administrative districts that we have in the country. But for the parliamentary, all that you need is 20 signatories from your constituency. And do we think this thing can be accomplished within the 16 days period?
What is the latest development concerning the transfer of votes?
About a week ago, we released a press release and then started media engagement, educating the public on the transfer of votes. You know, we are finished with the transfer of votes for persons who want to contest the parliamentary election. This time, we are opening the window for transfers for voters who are registered in one constituency and have relocated to different constituencies and would want to vote in their new places of residence. So the exercise begins today, the 9th of September, and it will end on the 7th of October.
How about the application for proxy voting and the circumstances surrounding it?
Application for proxy voting started on the 17th of August up to the 26th of September. Hitherto, the process has been where the applicant himself comes to the office to pick the proxy form and then we'll go and then fill it together with the proxy. Then together they will come to the office to begin the process. This time around, the release also informed the public that the proxy, in the absence of the applicant, can come to the office and then pick the forms on behalf of the applicant. And this was what generated some debate, but that has been clarified at the Inter-Party Advisory Committee meeting. So as we speak, the misunderstanding has been cleared and the proxy application process is ongoing.
How about the exhibition of registration for the NHIS registrant that ends Saturday?
We did the first round of registration for all persons who registered from 2012 up to 2016. That was a 3-week exercise. We are finished. But per the orders of the Supreme Court, we deleted a number of names from the register for having used the NHIS card to register. Those people were given the opportunity to re-register. And we ended up getting 29,000 people doing the registration. Then we also opened a 2-day window for people to do continuous voters registration. We finished that, and we also registered prisoners.
Eric Jakpasu is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Ghana. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's government has released another wave of prisoners, 110 this time, in response to demands from political parties. An African Union envoy in the DRC, former Togolese Prime Minister Edem Kodjo, announced the news at Friday's session of the political dialogue he is currently facilitating. For VOA, Nick Long has more from the DRC capital, Kinshasa.
The release of political prisoners is one of the main demands made by the DRC's principal bloc of opposition parties as a precondition to their taking part in the dialogue that started this week. Last week, the government responded by releasing 8 pro-democracy activists and a further 170 prisoners held for a variety of offences. On Friday, the Justice Minister went further, signing a ministerial order for the release of 110 prisoners who, it is understood, have been held in connection with political activities. The dialogue facilitator, Edem Kodjo, announced the news to media Friday evening. A short while ago, he says, he received a copy of an order from the Justice Minister granting amnesty to 110 political prisoners who were already subject to the 2014 amnesty law. 110 are to be released this evening or Saturday, and he says this is real progress. Kodjo suggested most of the names were put forward by a group of political parties known as the G7 and that they are mainly people from Katanga province. In previous liberations, it was noticed there was not a significant number of prisoners from Katanga who were released, Kodjo said. So the G7 put forward a list of prisoners mainly from that province. VOA has seen the list of names. They are not people well known outside Katanga for the most part. The leading oppositionist and former governor of Katanga, Moise Katumbi's former cabinet director, Wi Mulongo, is not among them. Malongo was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment last month for illegal possession of a firearm, so the authorities would deny that he is a political prisoner. It is understood that most of the 110 people now being freed had been arrested while taking part in political demonstrations. Human Rights Watch said last week it had documented at least 20 long-term political prisoners who remained in detention in DRC, including leaders of political parties. It is not clear if any of these are among the 110. Kodjo suggested they might yet be freed. He says the release of political prisoners is not something that happens all at once. It's a process that takes time. He has no reason to be disappointed with the list of 110 names, he adds. It shows the lobbying on behalf of political prisoners is producing results and may have results for the others as well. An opposition politician taking part in the dialogue, Sami Badibanga, welcomed the latest releases. He says the fact that people are being freed, even if it's on the basis of the 2014 amnesty law, is proof that the dialogue is achieving something. Each of these measures is positive, he says, and he hopes there will be more measures like this in future. The dialogue participants held a debate Friday at which the ruling coalition and opposition stuck to opposing positions on the key question of how forthcoming elections should be sequenced. The opposition wants presidential elections to be held first, while the ruling coalition wants local elections held first. Nick Long for VOA News, Kinshasa.
More than 25 Kenyan parliamentarians from opposition parties have joined the new Jubilee Party ahead of the ruling party's delegates' conference on Saturday. Meanwhile, the main opposition party, the Orient Democratic Movement, or ODM, celebrates its 10th anniversary in the coastal city of Mombasa in what is expected to be one of the biggest celebrations to be held there. David Ohito is the digital editor at the Standard newspaper in Nairobi. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Kisumu by phone and first asked about the defection of the opposition parliamentarians.
It's very interesting scenario in Kenya because this MPs are defecting after just passing the law, which bars party hopping. So the big question is whether do they understand why they passed that law, which was done last week. Two, Jubilee, yes, is in power and enjoying the power of incumbency and is attracting people up to the extent of allegedly bribing them to cross over, as alleged by the opposition. There's still no evidence whether any MP has been bribed. But we understand there are very lucrative packages that are being presented to these MPs who have crossed the floor.
We also understand that the ODM will be celebrating 10 years anniversary in Mombasa. Is this a counter move to attract support too?
Yes, nothing can be further from the truth. ODM will be celebrating 10th anniversary, while its rival will be celebrating first day of existence. So a very interesting parallel of the Kenyan politics. But if you ask me, there's not much change that we have seen. No new leaders have emerged. We have the old leaders wearing new masks in different parties under Jubilee, for example, donning the same old Kanu red color and showing the faces that were very, very identical with the Kanu regime. Oh, some observers prefer to call it reincarnation of Kanu under Jubilee. But on the other hand, ODM sits in the coastal town, one, because they want to rebut the perception that they have no influence, that they have no supporters. And it has been very well choreographed. The buses are carrying people from all corners of the country towards the coast. And what remains to be seen is the body language and the speeches that will be made there. But what I can assure you, the signal and the for full-time campaigns as we head to 2017, August 8th general election, it has been on now, and I think we are yet to see another show of might and power plus money.
Talking of the next election, which is due in less than a year on August 8th next year, are all these activities, should we take them as the start of the campaign and the usual political realignment in Kenya?
It's basically the usual political realignment. And we will see much more fallout and even court battles because the Jubilee we are talking of, the ruling coalition has never held something called a nomination exercise. The president was not nominated by anybody, just endorsed in a boardroom. The deputy president, the same, never endorsed by anybody. They've never held elections. On the other side, we've had very acrimonious nominations in ODM, some which have been bitterly disputed, and in cases where people have accused the party of trying to stifle democracy in nomination exercises. So I think the boiling point for Kenya's politics is just a second away.
Do we expect this time to see proper national political parties other than the joining of ethnic parties to form national parties?
The party system has not been allowed to develop in Kenya. People still go to parties because of individuals. Today, the so-called Jubilee Party, which is ignominiously being unveiled, if the president and the deputy walk out of that party, it will be a shell. Same as ODM, when you pull out people like Raila Odinga and Joho, that party will remain a shell. We have not built structures equivalent of Chama Cha Mapinduzi and ANC in South Africa. So we are yet very far from strong political parties. If you look at even the manner in which the Jubilee has been created, it's a whole boardroom affair. Call so-and-so because he's our friend or an ally. Call so-and-so because he's strategic to us in terms of looking at ethnic alliances. And that now just helps to polarize the country as we go to the general election. I don't think we have put strong structures where a party can have say on who becomes the president, who becomes a party official, and so on and so forth.
David Ohito is the digital editor at the Standard newspaper in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kisumu. The UN Refugee Agency reports hundreds of internally displaced people in northern Nigeria are returning home to the villages and towns. They were forced to flee to escape the brutal onslaught of Boko Haram militants. The UNHCR warns these returns may be premature as these areas are devastated and lack basic services. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The Nigerian armed forces have retaken many areas in northeastern Borno state, formerly controlled by Boko Haram insurgents. Since these towns and villages are once again accessible, the UN Refugee Agency says it expects a growing number of internally displaced people will decide to leave their camps and go home in the coming weeks. And this, says UNHCR spokesman Leo Dobbs, is a matter of concern, as these areas have been devastated under Boko Haram rule. He says many of the internally displaced will be going back to destroyed homes and infrastructure, to areas that lack essential services. Despite these dire conditions, he tells VOA, many of the people appear to be happy to be returning home.
And they're citing, as I mentioned, the conditions that they've been living in. They've been living in terrible conditions, many of them. And they are voting with their feet, as it were. But we want to stress that they need to have the right information. They should not be going back to areas which lack basic services, healthcare, and where they can get food, potable water.
The UNHCR stresses the returns should be voluntary and safe. Dobbs says security remains a big concern. Although Boko Haram has been chased out of Borno state, he says aid agencies cannot move around without a military escort. He says the protection of IDPs returning home must be increased and improved. The UNHCR reports most of the displaced are women, children, and the elderly. It says this group is particularly vulnerable to becoming sick and malnourished if they do not receive shelter, health care, food, and safe water. It says women and girls in particular are at risk of being sexually violated and are in need of protection. The UNHCR estimates the Boko Haram insurgency has displaced more than 2.5 million people in northeastern Nigeria since 2014. This figure includes nearly 190,000 refugees in neighboring Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now, it's time for music from African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. Somebody else, Mr. Dimsy over here. Plenty people don't they ask. Now, which Baba do the jazz? Ready, Baba do well for me. Now, my life is done. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray and fast. No, be your show, no, be jazz. I'm watching. Osinachi, Kamnukwa, Osinachi, one man, Osinachi, Awachi, Osinachi, Mama, Osinachi, 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 Awachi, my humble father, Sinachi, my loving daughter, Sinachi, my baby mama, Sinachi, tell him mama do, Sinachi, no be by force to go Dubai, I've been awaiting cause the fight. And I just did my own, they laugh, yeah, because you got it in my side. They want to take away my favor. They want to spoil in my career. And I don't say I get the flavor. When you feel taxing na banya. I forgive and I forget. Baba God, he knows the best. My papa just buy his jet. I'm about to take off everywhere. Hey, what's in that tree? I'm no qua. What's in that tree? One name, man. What's in that tree? Oh, I want you. I go name my first daughter, Sinachi. My loving mother, Sinachuku. Promotion letter, Sinachi. Iyawomi, Sinachi. Now we shut in down Malaysia. Every show, the boy, they conquer. Thank you, Lord, you showed me love. Now I know I'm not alone. I go sing praises from house to church. I go throw party for every town. See my motto, see my mouth. Tell me why I no go shout. Not because I suffer fast. Not because I pray at fast. Not be your show, not be just. Oh, what she need. Tell me, what's in that cheek? I'm no one, what's in that cheek? One name, man, what's in that cheek? Oh, what she need. Tell me, what's in that cheek? My man, what's in that cheek? I'll be fair. What's in that cheek? Oh, what she need. And I thank the Lord who oversee me. And I thank the Lord for humble smith. And I thank the Lord who give me power. Oh, and I thank the Lord for all the riches. And they pray for house, you give me mansion. And they pray for car, you give me phantom. And they pray for fans, you give me stardom. Oh, you they show me love, you know, be like. You both went to no mind in Jibiri. You jam my family, Sinachuku. If no be God, where I forget. Forever we go give God the glory. We they travel, they go, they come. Everything we do, they prosper.
Baba fun mi la se ori re ki lowo fi gbe oga dem la so flawless. You're looking so flawless. Girl, you're beautiful and I must confess, I mean, you're looking so flawless. So flawless. You're looking so flawless. Girl, you're beautiful and I must confess, I mean, you're looking so flawless. Mommy, you're looking so flawless. Mommy, you're looking so flawless. Come on, taste of my success. Oh, you know I'm taking my conscience.
Like a goddess, you know you're the baddest, but I know it's so you already know this. Ew, God bless. The mama will buy you like this. Got me tempted to touch, tempted to touch, but I know I can't stand this stainless.
Do my thing. I don't see money since when I get 19. When I go jump with my team, we get paid. for everyone where they can sing. Now, we don't upgrade the matter. Daily and weekly and monthly and quarter. Now, we don't talk to butter. Family just smile and we know get quanta. That we just say Yoruba. Make them no go forget say Badona Baba.
Everybody run away. I said, when money. not day. Then they carry me pay. When money not day. Everybody run away. When money not day. Na na na. Oh no no no. Oh no no no. Oh no no.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impulga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Xiao Gang Chang, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. I remember, as the elders say, do not follow a person who is running away. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and China are accelerating cooperation on a defining challenge of our time, climate change. Scientists have warned us that the impacts of climate change may be catastrophic and irreversible. Much of the problem is caused by human activity, particularly the emission of greenhouse gases, byproducts associated with the burning of fossil fuels and the use of hydrofluorocarbons, which are used in refrigeration. To address climate change, the global community resolved to keep the temperature rise well below 2 degrees Celsius over pre-industrial levels, with the understanding that in order to do so, the world must reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So, on December 12th of last year, 195 countries adopted the Paris Agreement, which establishes a global framework to reduce global greenhouse gas emissions. For this document to come into force, at least 55 countries, representing at least 55% of global emissions, must formally join the agreement. The world's two largest economies, the United States and China, are also the largest emitters of greenhouse gases, combining for 38% of global emissions. That is why, on September 3rd in Hangzhou, China, President Barack Obama and President Xi Jinping formally joined the Paris Agreement. They agreed to continue collaborating on new technologies and strategies to combat climate change, and to work together to phase down the consumption and production of hydrofluorocarbons, as well as to promote a transition away from fossil fuels and towards low-carbon, climate-resilient economies. With both countries taking this important step forward, today the world comes significantly closer to bringing the Paris Agreement into force and honoring its commitment to future generations to address the dangerous impacts of climate change, said Secretary of State John Kerry in a written statement. Both the United States and China strongly urge others to join the Paris Agreement as soon as they are able, in hopes of meeting UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's goal of bringing it into force this year. The urgency of this challenge is clear, and it is critical that global efforts move forward without delay.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.